Welcome to Between Two Chairs, Demystifying Commercial Real Estate, the podcast that brings you the latest insights and trends on the South Florida commercial real estate market with your hosts, Fernando Arencibia Jr. and Jennifer Wollman. In each episode, we dive into the world of commercial real estate and break down complex concepts to make them accessible for everyone. Whether you're a real estate professional, a curious investor, or just interested in the South Florida market in general, Between Two Chairs is the podcast for you. So pull up a chair and join us.
Welcome, everybody, to another episode of Between Two Chairs. With me, as always, is the sometimes nagging Jennifer Wollman. Sometimes. I said sometimes. That's, you know, that's like when you tell somebody with all due respect, anything you say after with all due respect, it's fair game. No? I don't like it when you're quiet. Say hi, Jennifer.
Now who's nagging? Hi.
I love it.
Hello, hello, everybody.
Thank you guys for joining us.
By the way, did you see that thing that I sent you on Instagram? Watching Formula One with your mom. Well, because you're talking about nagging. I sent you on Instagram watching Formula One with your mom. You obviously haven't seen my Instagram.
You know, if it was a one-time thing, but it's like, did you see that thing that I sent you to Instagram? That's, you know, that can be so many.
It's the mom.
Nagging
over F1.
Over the F1.
I know,
exactly.
Why do they just go around in circles?
Yeah.
Like around in the same circles over and over again. So hello, everybody. That's what happens when you start with the nagging. Because then I have to reset the...
You have to reset the... you have to reset the computer. Well, it actually, it's very fitting because we want to have a conversation about tech. And specifically tech for commercial real estate. And, you know, we work with a lot of agents and, you know, oftentimes... What happens in almost like the life cycle of an agent is that as you are working on your systems and you're working on implementing all of your strategy to grow your business, you are bombarded with the opportunities for the usability of technology or the use of, you know, different vendors that have ideas to improve your business. And I think it's important to kind of organize what really are the necessary tech tools that a commercial practitioner needs, you know, to be successful in commercial real estate. So I thought it would be a good topic for us to discuss.
So the only thing I wanna put in a caveat because real estate has always been and is still a relationship business. And I think tech is great at making us more efficient at doing tasks maybe that we don't like but need to get done. However, if you use tech alone to do tasks that you don't like, and I'm thinking a lot of people don't like canvassing or cold calling or whatever, and so they think that by sending out 1500 emails a day, that's the same as canvassing, right? So my caveat here is make sure that the tools that you use are to implement repetitive systems or to make you more efficient, but never ever forget that there isn't a single piece of technology out there that beats face-to-face meetings and boots on the ground.
Well, you know, and I think it's very appropriate because we did an episode recently where we broke down all the things that were discussed during the NAR C5 CCIM Global Symposium. And in that conference, we heard from Tiffany Bova, who spoke about two things that were going to be primarily of concern for the growth of business. One was to be customer centricity, right? The focus of growth in your business is on the consumer. The second thing is that there has to be a fusion of people and technology. The emphasis needs to be on combining or blending human talent and technology for success. So the tools that we're going to discuss today are really, and I'm glad that you threw that caveat, because it's an important component of leading to success. There's not a single piece of technology that you are going to use that is going to lead you to success if it is not combined with your ability to create human contact, to develop those relationships. And I'll throw the last thing, which is to use it consistently, right? And right. So having a thoughtful, consistent approach is key to utilizing these tools and to be successful with it. And because you mentioned relationships, that is the one tool that is at the top of my list, right. And I know it's at the top of your list, yeah. Which is a consumer relationship management tool or a CRM software. There is an adage in the real estate industry, and I remember this early on in my career. About 2-3 years in, we went to a conference and there was this conversation about CRMs. And at the time, the technology was not as advanced as it is today. There's so many different things that you can do with a customer relationship management tool that you could not do 15, 17 years ago, right? And one of the things that I recall in the conversation was that they said, well, the easiest way to make a quick buck in real estate is to create a CRM and charge realtors $19.99 a month for using it. And obviously not just realtors, because plenty of people that are in sales or that are more importantly in the relationship building business use a CRM. And that is to say that the choices that are available for a CRM are
mind-spinning,
right? It's overwhelming the amount of choices that you have for a CRM. A lot of times when we have discussion, and you know, one of the things that we do with our agents is we always do a strategy session, and we do it periodically. But when they're first onboarding, we have a strategy session to help them build their business plan and how they're going to execute. And what we always tell them is, it doesn't matter which CRM you use. The most important thing is you got to pick the one that you're going to be able to use consistently. And some people like complexity in their tools. They want a lot of choices. They want to use so many. They want to use it in so many different ways. But most people are looking for simplicity, right? I want to be able to utilize it for its purpose. And so, but that becomes such a personal thing, right? So the choice of a CRM becomes a very individualized choice. But the most important thing is that you pick the one that works for you. And the definition of one that works for you is that you are able to use it consistently.
Right. Well, and I think it needs to go a little bit beyond that, because I could say that
we're keeping it here. That's it. No, no more.
Right. Ay, ay, ay. Now I'm going to have to start nagging you. Like, damn, I'm glad. No. So that's going to be my theme throughout. So if you want me to be annoying. So you could say that your phone is a CRM. Right? Because I have everybody's contact information, I have phone numbers, I can send emails, I can write notes. And for some people, this might be the beginning of a CRM.
Right.
If you're first starting, if you're not in sales, if you don't have CRM software, right, or, you know, in the old days, a Rolodex, this is now our Rolodex, right?
That's
right. So you can say, well, if calling and contacting my sphere and everybody I know, all I really need to do is I can put in my calendar. I could literally say, put in my calendar, I can schedule phone calls A through B. You know, I can do that. I can do that here. And I can take notes of when I spoke to all of my A's and what each A said. The issue and the reason for having a CRM beyond something as basic as your cell phone, which actually provides a ton of different components of a CRM, is that a CRM allows you to scale your business. If you have, like I do, every time I go to Apple and they help me with my phone, they're like, oh my God, you have so many contacts in your phone, right? If I were to contact those people on a consistent basis with more valuable information, more market reports, et cetera, that's a little bit harder to do from my phone, because unless I set up some kind of system on my phone that says, here's my Dropbox, take my marketing report and send it to everybody in my phone list, it's not going to work and you can't scale it. Whereas a CRM helps you organize everything much more detailed. It helps you break out people by category, whether they're past clients, whether they're people who are interested in wine, whether they're multifamily owners, whether they're equity investors, whatever it is, you can very easily get in and group people so that your messaging is super, super clear so that you can send them information that's valuable to them. Because what's valuable to, you know, a multifamily person might not be valuable to an industrial person. And I'm not going to send out, if I know a bunch of people who love wine or pizza, I'm not going to send that to everybody because there might be clients who don't like wine or pizza. Although I don't know if they
do. Yeah, they're not your clients. They all love wine and pizza. Well, but let me just say also that, again, going back to the melding or blending of the human element and the technology, that what we have found to be, you know, the case when people are building their CRM. So once you choose the one that you want to try out, and listen, you can, you know, I think an agent goes through probably two or three before they find the one that they really enjoy, that they're able to be consistent with. But I think part of what stops a lot of people to build their CRM initially is the fact that they start to
edit
before they actually input. So they, instead of just adding everybody that they know, everybody that knows them into the CRM so they could begin to build those relationships, they start to say, well, I don't know if this person will ever do business with me. And I think what happens is also is a mindset question about being a salesperson, you know, and I think that somehow that word has created a lot of anxiety in a lot of people about the idea that they don't see themselves as a salesperson. They don't think that the mindset shift, and we always discuss it with people, is, well, don't look at yourself as that. Look at yourself as you're providing a service and you're here to solve a problem, right? And if you have someone in that database that may come across a real estate issue, a real estate problem, something that they need to resolve, you want them to know that you're there available for that and to see themselves as a connector, right? You may not be licensed in the state of Georgia, but you might have a client who is looking for property in Atlanta. Well, as a broker, you have connections with people that are in the industry all over the country.
Right. Which, and by the way, if you're looking for somebody in Atlanta, I'm going to do a shout out for Michael Bull.
There you go. All right, there you go.
I had to sneak in.
Yeah, I love it. And so I feel that, you know, that if you shift your mindset and you see it, okay, I'm just going to say to everybody that I know, I am in real estate, right? And I'm here to be of service. How can I help? And if you need anything remotely that has anything to do with real estate, whether it's in this market or in any other market, let me know how I can make those connections. But the building of the CRM, this is, again, to your point at the beginning, it's not enough that you have the technology. It's the mindset that you're using to actually fulfill it. And if you're not adding every name there and begin to build those relationships through those systems, then it's not going to work for you. It doesn't matter how much you're paying for that CRM. The CRM is not going to do anything for you.
And I wanted to go back to the CRM and emails and everything because I read a book by Rod Santimassimo of the Massimo Group, and it's an older book. I want to say it's probably outdated, but the information in there isn't. But the reason I say that is because it is an older book, and so a lot of the tech that was in the book, they talk about Blackberries and stuff, but a lot of the brokers, I'm dating not only them but myself, because I know what a Blackberry is, and for all you much younger listeners, it's not a fruit. It was before the iPhone and what we all loved and used.
It is a fruit.
Well, it is a fruit, but the BlackBerry I'm referring to, you cannot use a BlackBerry fruit for a CRM. Anyway, so a lot of the brokers, he broke down the book in a great way where it was like, you know, they interview and tell the story of all of these great brokers, young dominators, and then, you know, the goats of the industry. And they had sections like, what would you tell somebody? How do you use tech, et cetera? And almost across every single one, the tech was to support my connections. And one of them, I can't remember who it was because it was a while ago, but he said, email is great for staying in touch, but you don't want to bombard people with emails. And as I sit here and look at my 242 promotion emails plus my 11 junk emails that came in since I cleared my cache this morning at 6 a.m., wow. I can tell you that most of these emails are useless emails. Whoever sent them out, I will never read them. I will never look at them. They don't know anything about them. Half of them are like, hey, Woolman, or hey, at Woolman, dear at. Like, that kind of communication is useless. It's wasting your time. It's making people hit the delete without even reading. So you want to make sure that your CRM brings value. Everything that you do has to bring value to Fernando's point. And do your homework and get to know some of the, you know, most of the people in your CRM you're going to know something about. But if it's somebody that you're going after who you don't know, do some research on them. What do they invest in? What properties do they already own? Find interviews on them. What was something that they threw out there, a hobby that they like or something? Because if you're trying to reach somebody that you don't know to cold call, other than to prospect to find space because you're a tenant rep and you have space, that's a little bit easier because you have something that might be of interest to them. You want to find out what their pressure points are, to Fernando's point. You want to find out what are their problems, or what do you think their problems might be, given that they have a portfolio of X spread all over the United States. Maybe it is a property management issue. Maybe it's an asset. Who knows what it is? But if you do the homework, now your email can be extremely intentional to that individual.
Absolutely. Well, the next thing that I have as a tool is obviously listing platforms and marketplaces, right? This is where you're going to list properties, conduct market research, you know, gain access to a wider audience. And, you know, it becomes important because of the dynamics of exposing a property to the marketplace, providing maximum exposure so that you can generate a lot of interest and multiple offers, which is really the highest intention of listing a property, is to generate multiple offer scenario, you know. And this again is one of those things that I find that within every listing platform, sometimes people are only adding, for example, the description. They're at the pictures, and they leave it at that. But usually, a lot of these listing platforms have other elements that, if you fulfill them, just improves your SEO, improves the way that the property is displayed, including we have to mention, especially in our marketplace, is how valuable the local MLS has been on the commercial side to be able to reach an audience that goes beyond the commercial broker, that also reaches to every real estate agent that might have a client of theirs that might be their residential client but might be looking for a commercial property.
Well, in the MLS, what was so cool about it, and what I love what our local one does, is they feed it to so many different platforms. They have relationships with so many different listing platforms. They have cities where we list listings on a city's property search, countries. We have different countries all over the world. So it goes international, and one entry. Single entry, which is what makes it so, you know, which makes it my number one go-to for putting it in. Plus, I love the fact that they do protect the listing information as your information, right? So it's your information. You own the information. If you upload pictures, they're your pictures. You can use them for forever. They don't get to use them. They put a watermark on it so other people can't use them. So I really like that. And then the fact, like, our local association has, what, something like 285 different. I want to say it's 285. It might be more. It might be a little bit less. But it's around there, almost 300 different agreements with countries and MLSs all over the world where listings go. And Southeast Florida is such an international draw that having your listings everywhere, as much exposure to your point as you can get, and in different languages. It translates the information for you. It allows the people to view your listing in whatever their local currency is. It shifts the listing from square feet to square meters in areas that use basically everywhere other than the United States that uses the metric system.
You know, you brought up something which I think it's really important, which is that a lot of these listing platforms will always give you a lot of data as to who's looking at your listing, you know, how is it performing compared to the competition. So you get almost like a report card that you can then shift gears if you need to do, you know, add things that you want to add to it, you know, and see how it performs differently. And our local association did this thing where they created a public-facing website for the listings. And on the commercial side, of when the listings are there, they're able to determine not only, you know, who's looking at all the listings and what mostly they're looking for, but where they're coming from, you know. And Perfect. That's when you start to realize that how many people, what countries in Europe are looking at our properties, what countries in South America are looking at. They're usually ranked by the number of unique visitors that are from those areas. And the same data applies to anything within the 48, you know, within the 50 states. They're able to say how many people from California, New York, Texas are looking at the properties, really all around the country. So it's really an interesting dynamic that it's not only a place to put the listing and to expose it to the marketplace, but it's always important to look at all the tools that they have for you to break down that data points that are giving you an indication of how the listing is performing and whether the marketplace is viewing it in the way that they should be doing.
Right. That website is southfloridacommercialpropertysearch.com. So you can get an idea of what's on there. And the other thing, the other platform that we use that I love, Crexy, you know, a lot of these platforms also give you a spreadsheet and they show you. So not only who's looked at your listing, but who's opened the flyer, who signed the NDA, whether they're a broker or a principal. So now all of a sudden, going back to how these all tie in, you can download that spreadsheet for the property, put it in your CRM, and now you can be in touch with everybody who's looking at whatever it is you have listed, whether it's a lease or a sale, and be like, okay, well, if this property doesn't work, what else do I have in there that I can market to them that's similar to this property?
Yeah, I agree. The next one goes into, we value the idea that there's a lot of macro data out there in real estate in general and in commercial real estate. And it is our belief, right? I think you share that with me. We've had plenty of conversations about it, that it behooves and it is incredibly important for a broker to be a hyper-local expert in their marketplace, to really understand the market dynamics very clearly. And there are so many things that go into that, but there are a lot of data analytics and market research tools, which again is another thing that you have to have in your tech toolbox. And that's where you get insights into property level data, but you also have understanding of the ownership details, transaction histories. You get to have both a historical and a very current perspective of the marketplace when you're diving into these market analytics tools. And there are a plethora of them, but there are always a few that stand out for the way that the data is conveyed and the way that the data is broken down. I know you and I always discuss, like, the value is not necessarily in the data, but it's in the way that you are able to synthesize it, analyze it, interpret it, and give it perspective.
Right. There's a lot of data out there. I mean, let's face it, we all are on data overload and it's easy to go down rabbit holes. So it's really important before you go down that rabbit hole, what's your purpose? What are you trying to do? Where's the best place to go? Try not to have more than 3 tabs open. That's something that I'm still working on. Mm-hmm. I think it was Darren Hardy who's like, never have more than 3 open. I'm like, you've obviously never done commercial real estate.
I don't even want to show you.
I
don't want to show you mine either. I don't want to show you mine. I also don't want to point out that I have 88,172 emails that have been unopened. That's not just today, guys. That's since yesterday.
but that goes to our point. Like, so if imagine how non-productive you are. Mm-hmm. Opening up 8,000. I mean, there's obviously 8,000 emails there that had zero importance to you or did nothing, provided nothing of value in the title to get you to open it.
Right.
Obviously, if it's from your customers, your clients, people, you know you're going to open it.
Exactly.
So back to our original point, if you're trying to use email to get in the door cold turkey and you just think that by sending out a gazillion emails that eventually somebody somewhere is going to call you, it does happen, right? That's why they do it. It's the numbers, but chances are that you're also going to get blocked and you're the person who cried wolf, 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 and nobody listens to you.
So I think our listeners are understanding how much you value the
email.
Yeah, well, the consumer relationship management, tool. And that's why it was at the top of the list. One thing, you know, you said, you know, there's a lot of data.
But wait, going to the analytics, I got sidetracked.
Sure. Well,
was there anything else you wanted to add?
Yeah, it's that you have to be purposeful, because all this tech and having the reason I said don't have more than three tabs open, which was a recommendation, is because if you go in, what data are you looking for? Why are you looking for it? Who is it important for? Because there's a lot of data when you go to any of these systems that's going to be interesting but not relevant to why you're looking for data. And it's easy to go down that rabbit hole if you don't have very clear intent on what and why you're looking for data.
And this is another aspect that I think we should add. I'm going to actually change the order of the list that I have, but I believe that this is a good moment to bring it up, which is that there is so much going on with AI and automation that is incredibly valuable to the commercial real estate sector and any sector in real estate that has to do with helping you analyze, synthesize, and make sense of all the data. That is out there. And I think that when AI exploded on the scene, and I think it's funny because AI has been around for decades. I think ChatGPT just really brought it into the ether,
context,
right? Where and every day, and then it became part of everyday conversations. But you know, when we started to see presentations on AI, what they said is that AI wasn't going to replace a lot of the things that people would say. Is they would say AI is not going to replace a broker, but a broker using AI is going to replace a broker that is not using AI.
Correct.
And so I have it on the list because I think it does so many things. It's not only about the data analysis, but it's about the automation of your workflow. It has to do with buying back your time by being able to process so many things that would oftentimes take you longer to get to. It's funny because yesterday we were meeting a colleague of ours who says, I do the same things you guys do, I just cannot scale it because I do it with pen and paper.
Right.
And that's where the difference is, right? Is that we always harp that the tools that you're using, you need to create systems in place so that you can automate a lot of that work and so that you can free yourself to focus on the things that are most important to the growth of your business.
Well, and to what we were saying earlier, it makes you more efficient. So in the case of AI, if you have the right questions and you find the data, the thing that's great about AI, and some programs like RPR have AI written into it so that you can, and even Adobe now does, I mean, all these systems do, where, okay, so I have all the data. Now what? You can take the data and you can say, okay, AI, take all of this data and write it for this type of audience.
Right.
So if you're presenting before a panel, it'll have one tone. If you're presenting to a city zoning department, it'll have another tone. If you're presenting to a potential investor, so that is where I think the use is super, super interesting.
Yeah.
And it becomes very effective because it allows you to take information and use that information in different messages, right? And to different audiences. And to me, that's the fascinating part of somebody who loves to write. And you can say, make it shorter.
Yeah.
You know, I want to capture somebody's attention in 5 seconds or less. You know, so what do I put as the title? Or where, you know, what do I focus on if I have all of this information? How can I make it the most concise message?
And it does so much more. I mean, there's so much potential there, especially if you have the ability to use your own data. so that it can analyze your own data. And I think that that becomes very important. In fact, we're working on a podcast episode where we kind of break down some of the top prompts in the use of ChatGPT for commercial real estate, which I think will be an interesting conversation. Now, you mentioned there's a lot of data. You don't want to go down the rabbit hole on a lot of these things because you end up feeling like I'm doing a lot of activity, but, you know,
it's busy work.
It's busy work, right? But if there is one place where I think you should go down the rabbit hole is geospatial and mapping technology. And specifically because of the breakdown of the demographics and understanding that, you know, I think in one of the, you know, again, referencing the podcast that we did on an update on C5, there was a conversation about that we are in the demographic and employment business, right? And labor business. But what I find really interesting is when I go and use RPR, right, which is a tool that we've mentioned here before, that you're able to really get a complete grasp of an area, the zoning, its demographics, what's happening in the area development-wise, you know, the people that are in there and what are their consumer behaviors within the area, understanding what is the area have a lot of in regards to, for example, a retail aspect or another, where is the need that needs to be fulfilled. There is so much to understanding the demography of the area that you are working on, right? It's really been crazy, the evolution of that, because for a long time, what we would get in demography was basically age. We would get household income.
And it's old because it was based on old census data. Yeah,
exactly.
It's only the most recent census data, which was exactly usually 10 years.
But when you get to Tapestry now, the way that it is even expressed is in a way that it is understandable for why that information might be valuable to the consumers. Even things, and we mentioned that before, like if you are working with a food and beverage restaurant and their focus is breakfast and lunch, right? And they want to have a high lunch crowd. One of the metrics that they want to hit when they're in a location is the number of daytime workers from 9 to 5 in one area. So even drilling down to that level, which is there in the RPR, is incredibly valuable to when you're doing site selection for a client.
Not only that, it can get you, for example, the Tapestry and RPR can get you down not only the daytime population, but it will tell you what the predominant Tapestry segments like, whether it's fast food, fast casual, whether it's, I mean, it's insane the amount of detail you get. And I love printing out an RPR Tapestry report when I'm going to go do boots on the ground in an area, because then I try to see what's currently there. What's coming? Is there a shift in does it look like there's a shift in what's coming?
Right.
Or are the people that are there missing the mark in terms of the type of businesses that are going in there versus what the Tapestry wants? And it's interesting, if you see an area, I did this recently, I went to an area and there were a ton of vacancies, and I'm like, why are there so many vacancies? And I started looking at the types of businesses that were there. They didn't match the Tapestry report at all.
Wow.
So it was like, oh, somebody said, oh, this area needs, I can't remember what it was. I think it was a bar or something. I mean, there were so many bars. But the whole area, if you read the Tapestry, the top two demographics were extremely family oriented. Everything was related around children. The first two Tapestries were all about families and kids. And so then you looked at the mix, and I was looking at the mix. There were no like toy stores or bookstores or children's activities. There were no Kumans. There were none of these things that would support that. So I thought, am I missing something? And am I getting something wrong? So that's when you go out and you start talking to the business owners and the neighbors and what they're seeing. And that's where the boots on the ground come into play. But to me, that was fascinating.
Very, very, very important. Well, I'm down to two segments here. Because you got to order your pizza and you got to go get your wine. So, you know, priorities, guys, priorities. One is a cloud-based document management system, which is very important. And here I'll give a shout out to our friend George Guerra with RESF, which he always says that we got to work at the speed of business, right? And long are the days where, you know, it was pen and paper and, you know, you have to go into the office and print out a contract and get your folder and put it all in there and make, you know, bring out another copy. And or back in the day when people would use carbon paper to make multiple copies of one page. But I find that having the ability to be able to execute on, you know, a contract, a document, the sharing of offering memorandums, all that stuff, in a way that it is digital, in a way that it is quick, and that you have access to that information anywhere you're at, is incredibly important. It's incredibly important.
I agree.
And I think that it also speaks to not only the organizational factor for you as a business, but very importantly about meeting the client where they want to be met, which is now, I want to throw this in there because a lot of people sometimes don't make the connection. When you look at certain platforms online, websites that are very successful, that people use, you know, consistently, when they use it in such a high frequency, they're getting trained on how to use it. There's a certain level of expectation that they develop when they use something that it works. Could you imagine another video platform? Could you build another video platform that doesn't have all of the interface that you experience through YouTube? No, the consumer is gonna be like, it's lacking. Mm-hmm. Yeah, great, you created this, and now I have all this information, but they wanna interact with it the same way that they interact with YouTube, right? Because they're used to how to speed up a video, how to stop it, all that stuff. So we always have to look at, when you're choosing tools, that they're meeting the customer where they want to be met, and that the consumer behavior that they've already developed, that you're satisfying that, you know? So anyway, I digress a little bit. The last two are kind of connected, which has to do with marketing and digitally advertising and social media tools. You know, I was looking at Gary Vaynerchuk published his latest book, Day Trading Attention. I know that was something that Beth Azor mentioned during the presentation in C5. And I think that it's increasingly more and more important to have all the tools available to be able to share and market and advertise. And nothing, I think, is going to outbid the exponential value that social media has for a business nowadays.
I would agree. I have no idea what business that mom video was, but I forwarded it to you.
Right.
Exactly. The mom watching F1 with her kid. So yeah, I mean, even if it's not related necessarily directly to business, it's definitely an impact because it helps people see who you are, and it gets back to the authenticity. And it's funny because, you know, the platforms, you know, if you use Link, Direxen, Instagram is a little bit more back and forth and a little bit more social, whereas the other two are different types of information that you get out. But there are a lot of stalkers, right, that you don't even know about. They never engage with you, but they're watching you. They like your content on LinkedIn. They find value in your information. They see you. You don't even know who they are. And this goes back to Beth Azor. It's not who you know. It's who knows you. And all of a sudden, they will reach out to you, and because they've been following you quietly on social media, and you don't even know who's out there consuming your content.
I always remember that when I was going to college, I started working at Great Western Bank, and I was a teller, and you know, we had a great manager. His name was Sal Ferradas. I think he's still in banking here in South Florida. Great guy. And he would do these, monthly meetings. And in one of the meetings, I think he read a story about the silent consumer. And I am a very big believer that when you go into the social media sites, obviously, there are a lot of people that share and there are a lot of people that comment. But there are also, I think, far more people that are just watching, you know, and it's really interesting to me when I go to a conference and I meet someone from another part of the country that, you know, we're connected through social media, but we're not really interacting. And then all of a sudden we meet in person and they tell me about, oh, I saw you did this and I saw that, that was really interesting. Or they ask me a question about it. And so there's a lot of people that are listening and, you know, you just don't know. They might not interact, but they're listening, they're paying attention. It's really a lot of fun to make those connections in person when you see the person. It's also a lot of fun when you see someone in person that you have only seen like a little picture. I don't know who it is that we saw, but I was like, boy, he looks a lot taller in person than he does with his LinkedIn picture. So that was always cool. But yeah, connectivity is the name of the game. And I think that's why we started with the CRM and we ended up with social media, because at the end of the day, everything that we use, every tool that we use is really about building those relationships.
Yeah, it was Greg Shank. And right. It was Greg Shank. Yeah, that we comment a lot on each other's stuff on LinkedIn. But it was funny because I see him in person and then it was like, hey, I feel like I know. Yeah. And then it was like, wait, this is the first time we've met in person. And it was so cool. And yeah, you're like, he's a lot taller than I thought.
Yeah.
He was.
Yeah, Greg, you gotta get a new picture, Greg. It's not showing your height.
Yeah.
All right, everybody. Thank you so much for joining us. I know that we have. No, we're not skipping anything. I'm going to introduce our special fun fact, which Jennifer has the pleasure of sharing with us today. Jennifer, please share the fun fact for the podcast.
No, I have to find it. There it is. So since we're talking about tech, prop tech is a huge, huge business all on its own. And even though it fell 42% in 2023, overall venture capital investment in prop tech was $11.38 billion.
Wow. My God, that's incredible.
Maybe we're in the wrong business.
Yeah. No, we are in the right business. We are a tech-driven, customer-centric company, and we're going to continue to push that.
I know. I love our tech.
Absolutely.
I only need to have one tab open.
There you go. Exactly. There you go. That's right. Only one tab. All right, everybody. Thank you so much for taking the time. You know, share with us what kind of tools are you using? Did we miss one? Is there a category that we didn't mention? We would love to hear from you. And again, thank you for supporting the podcast. It's incredibly rewarding for us and we really appreciate it. And I don't know if you could tell, but we kind of enjoy doing it. So thank you. Bye, everybody.
Bye, everyone.